Imagine standing in Midtown Kingston, New York, just, you know, looking up at this massive 65,000 square foot brick building at 77 Cornell Street.
Oh yeah, it is absolutely huge.
Right. So back in February 1917, this place actually opened as F. Jacobson & Sons, which was the largest shirt factory in New York State at the time.
And today, it is still there, but it's buzzing with roughly 60 working artist studios.
Exactly. So welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at an editorial from the Edit by Destination Hudson Valley. And our mission today is really to figure out how this relic of early 20th century garment manufacturing actually survived.
Because the answer kind of challenges everything we think we know about historic buildings. I mean, saving this place wasn't about freezing it in time.
No, not at all. It's more like the building is a giant piece of hardware that just needed a software update to run a totally new operating system.
That's a great way to put it. It is really the ultimate survival story for industrial architecture.
Yeah.
Because the building's fundamental purpose, you know, being a place where things are actually made that hadn't expired.
Right, even if the garment industry itself had completely moved on. So to see how that software update happened, we really have to look at the pivotal year of 2002.
Yeah, that was when a local developer named Mike Piazza bought the factory.
And normally you hear developer buys historic factory and you immediately think, okay, here come the luxury condos or the high-end office space.
Oh, totally. But he didn't gut it for that. Instead, he looked at the artists who were, well, already sort of unofficially using the space.
Yeah, they were basically squatting there.
Right. But he embraces them. He actually commits to an artist-tenant rental preference because the architecture itself was already perfectly calibrated for them.
Wait, how so? Like, how does a 1917 shirt factory work for modern artists?
Well, think about it. A 1917 sewing floor needs 13-foot ceilings,
yeah,
right? And wide column spacing.
Oh, true.
Plus incredible natural north light pouring through those massive factory windows. So it was engineered for textile workers, but it turns out to be uncannily perfect for modern painters and ceramicists.
I mean, I get the architectural fit, but I'm kind of struggling with the math here.
The financial side.
Yeah. You have a developer in 2002 choosing starving artists over luxury apartments. I mean, in Kingston, that sounds like a recipe for bankruptcy.
You would definitely think so.
Right. Like, how does an artist-tenant preference actually keep the lights on and justify a 65,000 square foot footprint?
Well, so that is the core thesis of Piazza's strategy. He realized that a building is an object you make, kind of like a painting.
Okay, I'm following.
By deliberately curating the tenant mix, by programming the space, he built a unique identity. When you curate a specific community of makers, you create a gravity that draws people in.
So the artists aren't just passively paying rent, they are actually generating foot traffic.
Exactly. They turn an isolated factory into a cultural destination. And that sustained public engagement is what actually creates long-term financial stability.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah, and there is a brilliant quote in the source material that just perfectly sums this up. It says, "Preservation alone empties buildings. Programming fills them."
Wow. Preservation alone empties buildings. Programming fills them. That is, that's really powerful. And when you walk through the doors today, you can instantly see that programming at work.
Oh, absolutely. It is loud, it's messy, it's highly active.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite of a quiet, pristine gallery. It's like walking through a living museum. I mean, you can meet six different artists actively creating in their workspaces in the time it takes to just walk a single traditional gallery floor.
And that activity is the revenue-generating engine. Like, take Alexis Feldheim, for example. She runs a Kingston ceramic studio inside the building.
Right.
She doesn't just make pottery behind closed doors. She offers accessible wheel-throwing classes to the public. So you can literally walk in and turn an "I've always wanted to try that" thought into a Saturday afternoon reality.
That's amazing. And then right down the hall, you have Demetria Chapo creating these stunning sculptural works, pieces that were actually just featured in the 2025 Kingston Design Show House.
Yeah, her work is incredible. And she also hosts outdoor pit firings.
So these artists are actively turning private studio space into public revenue-generating events that basically keep the whole building's ecosystem alive.
Exactly. And, you know, this isn't just a Kingston story either. The entire Hudson Valley has far more 1900s industrial stock than it has tenants.
Oh, I'm sure. There are so many of those old brick buildings around.
Right. So the shirt factory really proves that a building's highest use is rarely its first use. And it's almost never its prettiest use.
Yeah, it's just meant to operate.
Exactly. Its highest use is simply to operate. We see this with other successful adaptive reuse projects nearby too, like the Hutton Brickyards or Stockade Works.
Right, those are great examples.
They didn't try to turn these spaces into pristine monuments. They just found what the building naturally knows how to do.
The raw materials go in, finished goods come out, and the hardware just keeps running. Mm-hmm. It really completely changes how you look at the architectural landscape.
Totally does.
So here's a thought for your next road trip. The next time you drive past a vacant, aging industrial building, don't ask what it used to be.
Yeah.
Ask yourself, what is this space still capable of making?